couple of quotes here today. And first is out of the Gospel of Luke, "For it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks." Out of the abundance of the heart, what is inside will show itself when you listen. First, when you listen to yourself, and then when you listen to others, you get what it's about, where people are. Second quote is from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., whose day we celebrate and commemorate. His birthday tomorrow. He spoke, "I believe that unarmed truth, and unconditional love will have the final word in reality." I'm going to just read that again. Just let it sink in what is being said. "I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. This is why right, temporarily defeated, is stronger than evil, triumphant." Reflecting on the life of Martin Luther King Jr., we have to consider him as an orator, as a prophet, as a culture shaper, as a minister, and as a human being that deeply challenged us and deeply challenged this country to its very foundations. And I ask myself, as I think about what he did in his ministry in the short time of his life that was cut short from us, I have to ask myself, are there speeches that can change the world? Is our world really defined by our words? By the words we make and by the way that we speak about the world? Is that how our world is shaped? In light of this, and being a person that chose a vocation where words are very much a part of my life, I have to ask myself, have I ever given a sermon where that's changed the world? I doubt myself deeply. And yet, oftentimes, words that shape and change the world are not in that moment yet recognized in what they're doing. It's always after the fact that humanity and memory looks back and says, yes, there was a shift in reality. There was a paradigm shift in a culture or among a people. Tomorrow we remember Dr. Martin Luther King, a life of spiritual, and his life of spiritual and social sensitivity, a life of power, a prophetic voice and a clear witness and summons for our society to do one of the hardest and most simplest things to do that we all struggle with, change. It's almost the most simple thing. When you look at it intellectually, you think, how easy. It's one degree away, and yet it's almost the most impossible and hardest thing to do, simply change. We all wrestle with that. We wrestle with that within ourselves, change. And then that kind of gets compounded because you wrestle with it within a marriage or within a partnership, change. You wrestle with that within friendships, change. Institutions wrestle with that, change. It's so simple to look at it from the outside and to say, this needs to happen. But for it to sink in and for the roots to take hold, it is very, very difficult. Yet, not impossible. Change does happen. It has to happen. In order for life to exist, it must take place. Change must happen to our relationships, to ourselves, to our institutions, and, as the Dr. King would bear witness to our own country. Change. I used to live in Virginia, as I just said, and I've spent some time, a number of times there at the U.S. Capitol, and I remember standing on those white marbled steps where that happened, where this March on Washington happened, and where the Dr. King gave these words. I hope that we all received a copy of his speech there that was being distributed to with the bulletin as something that we as a people have not only the right to read, but the indebtedness to read. Read that over the next 24 hours. Read it. Read it in such a way where you let it speak to your soul. But I've sat there and stood there at those steps with the kids and have reflected on that long reflection pool with the Washington Monument there. And there was a din. It was kind of busy. There was a wedding photo shoot happening there. And there was also a open air shouter. Let's just call him the person that. He was shouting a message that was full of shame language. I remember that. And I think, my, how different are the words, how different the spirit is in this place now that I hear that, compared to what was being said by Dr. King and compared to the words that were falling on my ears. I almost wanted to cover my children's ears. How different an environment can be. But it's not the place that was hallowed. It's not that ground. It's just as the same as the ground here in Oregon. It's the message. It's the truth of being in tune with what needs to be said when what needs to be said is very hard and difficult to receive and let alone be discerned and distilled and spoken. It's very hard, but not impossible. Closing my eyes and standing there and seeing that place in my memory and hearing these words rapturously and with vibrato said by the Dr. King's voice. He said this out of that speech. We have also come into this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now, not later, not tomorrow, not next year, now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. Martin Luther King Jr. Whether it was spoken almost 50 years ago, over 50 years ago, on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, or whether it is spoken here in Portland, Oregon, do you not feel the bedrock beneath these words of the truth? Of the integrity? Of the sincerity and almost the simplicity of what needs to be said being spoken. In the words, there is an eternal summons to do something simply as simple as loving your neighbor. That's what he's saying. It's time to love your neighbor. It's time to love the person next to you. It's time to do what God has commissioned us to do. On another note, on another thread, I've spent some time over the last 6 months in the book of Genesis, and I've noticed something in that book, especially in the first three chapters, whenever it's talking about it's a poem of creation, it's a poem of universal shaping, it's a poem about Sabbath keeping. Whenever you read that, it's about keeping Sabbath, resting and doing as God has done. There are lessons within those first three chapters of human relationships. How do human relationships work? How do we keep it together? There are lessons about divine image bearing and even adversarial advice within that first three chapters. But what's interesting to me in that third chapter is, more or less, Adam and Eve, they were given and they got what they asked for. What's interesting to me is what they were seeing and what they were striving for is to be God-like, to know good and to know evil. And in so doing, and in that time, they were given that. The scripture bears witness of it here in chapter 3, verse 22. It says, "Then the Lord God said," referring to Adam and Eve, "See, the man and woman, they have become like one of us, knowing good and evil." They got what they asked for. Now, whether or not they could bear that, whether they were made to bear it, that's another thing for history to tell. That's not the purpose of this. It's the point that we can now recognize, even back then, we were given the gift and the burden of knowing good and evil. When Dr. King proclaimed, "I have a dream," he was witnessing to knowing and experiencing the good. It was a dream about living and fulfilling the good that we are all capable of, based upon the divine image stamped upon each and every person here. Each and every human being in history bears that image. Dr. King was calling out the sin of human and cultural exploitation. He was drawing the curtain back and calling it out and condemning it and saying there's nothing to redeem because from this exploitation, from this racism, because there is no eternal goodness in crushing and upholding the suffering of another human being that needs to be called out and be done away with. It is time. I don't know about you, but I'm challenged by this. I'm challenged by it afresh and anew because I see within myself how lazy I've gotten. I'm guilty. I'm guilty of it. I've gotten lazy. It's easy to slip into that place within life where it's less about my neighbor and it's more about me. I like to serve myself, to be frank. But I don't like anyone to tell me that that's what I'm doing. Woe to you. I might not like you. But then the Spirit, and I commune with Spirit. I commune with Christ. I commune with the Scriptures. I commune with the Quaker tradition. And then there, lo and behold, I look upon my heart and I say, and I hear the words, "Mark, are you loving your neighbor? Or have you forgotten them? And you've made your life all about Mark." I shared a poem. Actually, it was a post on Facebook. My Methodist friend is writing there from North Carolina. His name is Adam Baker, and I felt like his statement here, his poem, was very fitting about this theme of choosing the right, choosing the good of the image that we are all bearing here, and loving our neighbor. He wrote this, and then I'll close with another song lyric. Adam Baker writes, "In shuddering times, after the collapse of expectations, when what has been pulled back, unveiling wounds that so many have described as healed, hold one another up as we stumble from the cities, lamenting what was and what has become. Yes, lament together as we bob and weave like drunkards, unsure if we are fighting or dancing, walking down this road to God knows where. That at least is honesty. But let us pay attention, even in our pain. Pay attention when we are asked for our stories and we share them with strangers. Pay attention when we, in the telling of our hearts, begin to burn within us. And pay attention to these small cook fires along the way. When we or those we walk with might stop and give thanks to God, even in the dust, pay attention. May we find, as our crumbs are broken and shared, that our eyes are more open to who actually walks with us than they have ever been before." In light of this message and entering into a time of open worship, I close with the poetic words of a song that many of us will know here by you too. One man come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come, he to justify, one man to overthrow. In the name of love, what more in the name of love? One man caught on a barbed wire fence, one man he resist. One man washed up on an empty beach, one man betrayed with a kiss. In the name of love, what more in the name of love? Early morning, April 4. Shots ring out in the Memphis sky. Free at last, they took your life. They could not take your pride. In the name of love, what more in the name of love? On that note, let's enter into a time of open worship to commune with the Spirit, to turn inward, and to listen to that which is holy, that which walks with us, that which comes to us in the dark watches of the night, but comes to us in the name of love. Let us turn to that Spirit now.